Mr. Cowan's Reel 6. Well, Stuart, Folkestone, did you become involved with sports? And was there plenty of sport?
Oh, yes, plenty of sport, yes. A lot of Italian sports and this and the London. I had a great day for sports. I used to make full day for sports, and everybody should train. We used to get quite a few lads trained for different things, all around sports. And we had a football team at the same time. We used to go around all the different. A lot of Italians playing football, so we got a good football team. Never lost for something to do, you know.
You'd have a lot of other army units in the area.
Oh, yes, yes.
Did you get on well with them?
Yes, you know, well, we never had any trouble with them. I mean, there was, I can't remember that. I have to be in hell. A bit of sex business, and I got different. As I said, there was another barracks further over. I can't just remember the regiment was in there, but which have in the city games, you know. And then when the main sports day, which in the challenge with different battalions, they sported. We had to have one particular day for our own sports, and then they changed the battalion sports. Which was quite entertaining. As I said, we had a football team which went all over the place, different things. Yeah, there was no problem with sportsmen, quite a few sportsmen. I think most of the chaps, whenever sports, they got to do their duties. That was the only way it was kind. But we first got quite a few of the sportsmen, footballers especially. Yeah, I was known for the DLI to have one or two good footballers come out of them.
And you were fully equipped with weapons and everything that the battalion should have had.
Yes, we had our own gun carriers and everything that they needed for going into action. For. As I say, I think I still think now that I'm looking back with a whole battalion, most of the time we're in England, there's no transport or nothing like that, you know.
So you, in effect, you had men going out on draft. And you had men going out on draft.
Yes, and there was a few coming, a few more players coming.
And those coming in, yeah.
But, it was more so later on when we left more bikes that they would start to take things away from the one of those units. I just can't remember the time that they start taking them away from them. But you sometimes don't notice that. You see people leaving the planning, you know where they're going to, you know.
Was Folkestone out of range of the German coastal guns? Were you receiving bombardment?
Oh, yes, yeah.
So they were hitting Dover, but they couldn't get to Folkestone.
I'll be honest with you, I don't know if they even heard one of them big guns yet. I don't think I did anyway. We heard a lot about them, but we didn't never heard about them. Never sort of heard them personally. No, I don't know what part they came from in France. To do the dive bombing in England, our part of them anyway, could be anywhere, you know.
Was the morale of the battalion good? Spirit?
It was quite good, yes. Yes, I would say it was good. The battalion was really going out of the time, you know. Everybody was sort of working in their proper jobs, they knew what they do every day. And there's always some for different companies had different things to do every day, so they kept the lads on the move all the time.
You mentioned Major Dryden, was it, that took...
Yes.
Did he take command of the battalion?
He did take in charge of the battalion when without the colonel. He was second senior.
What was he like?
A marvellous fella. He was most helpful to any place. Actually, when he went up before them, he was a regular major, and he sort of like a second father to at the times. And he should have me as much as he could. I know one or two instances in the camp when he helped most of the people when they had any troubles at home. He used to see the troubles at home put like that one thing. I mean, my Lance Corporal in the police, Burton Roman, he had a bit of trouble at home. He belonged to Jagger. His wife and his kids, and he was with them in the police. Of course, the best part about it, which I didn't know, Morgan was out in India with Major Dryden, and he used to look after his horse and whatnot. So there were a great repertoire of him, if you know, and he had it over his trouble at home nature, everybody got a hold of him. So that was a terrible thing. And we had another major stayed by Monte Fury, the French were visible there. Well, I can't say now, but most of them you should call them also. So he's a bit of a bombastic major. He wasn't well later at the time, I would say. I can't begin to tell you the name you should call him, so. But nonetheless, I'm sorry like them. He was all, and mind, he was all in the field when he went on skiing. He would stand there and he would start and tell you something about the old radio or something like that. And Hindi, and Major Prince would come and say, I was all in. What are you doing here? You shouldn't be here. You should be getting somewhere like that. Or to the Major himself, what were you doing, Corbin, here? You do your job, he's not running the job, he's not running the scheme. He's all being, look ahead, you know. For majors, you know, for majors. But as far as another growth and everything, I didn't know what Major Steinberg was, what the theory was in mind. But he was just attached. He just had joined us with attached to DLI, what I didn't know.
I think he was ex regular DLI.
He was,
evidently from a very rich family.
Yes, he was from a rich family, yes. Even to only a few years ago, I realised that one of them had a lot of resources within England, the big family. Must have been his relations. But I know for a fact he died later because even Major Dwight died earlier on after the war.
Are there any other officers at that time that you recall?
Major Taylor. Major Taylor was one of them. I've seen him since after the war. He was still the York Races here when I saw him at one of them. He's one of the senior majors. There's quite a few. I've been in contact with quite a few of them, it's so long ago, I just can't remember.
Amongst the NCOs, does any stand out in your mind?
Well, we had one or two. The Sergeant Major was kind of amazing. He was a good regimental sergeant, he was quite decent. And there was Sergeant Robson, quite a few sergeants, you know. Just can't even remember. They might come out on plenty of them.
What were they like, by and large, the NCOs?
Oh, quite good. Yeah. When I saw them, just Scott. That was, he was quite good. When he came from, he was at Scotland motor when he came down there. And he went somewhere else. He didn't wait for it. He was taken away from the camp. That was just good. There was Rodham, Sergeant Rodham, who's an alpha there. Sergeant Headley was in charge of the Ben Carrier section. He was quite a nice chap as well, a nice lad. And there was a chap with a foreign name, he's really a character, I know I can't think of his name now. But he was another sergeant, he was a character, he was with him. Actually, he came from Bransford to Willingdon, and from Willingdon to Scotland, to Forstmouth, and he stayed with her all the time.
Was there any that stand out in your mind that you didn't see eye to eye with, or didn't get on well with?
Oh, there was one or two, but I just can't remember the name. There was one or two that were a bit, didn't like you if you're putting people up in the platoon, whatnot, you know. One or two should think they could come in late because they were sergeants. One or two should catch it at the garden. And if you had privates just come in at the same time, you had to put them in the charges. Of course, they just didn't agree with that thing. They were sort of in the bad position, but they just drawn once, you know. Yeah.
Were you in the folks in the area for quite some time?
Yeah, well, quite. I'm just trying to think back. I was talking about folks on the way. But I think we left before the next Christmas, mind, because we finished up in Christmas in Peyton and Devon.
What were you doing down there?
Do the same thing, holding battalion. We went down the road, but we took most of the stuff. The trucks were with train and whatnot, and we took the convoy of the trucks with our gear in from the battalion. You know, the three policemen. I let them at least took out the trucks overnight, but they traveled very way down. the papers from prison. It was a long journey. We were doing it in a couple of days.
And this was the time when you're going to tell me what the road discipline was, the convoy discipline. What is the, how does a convoy move? Pretty large one, obviously.
Well, it moves. Well, we moved for a day. We had my night time. We should try and find get to a place where we could hold up the night time instead of travelling by night. I caught him on the prisoner, but we were there for the rest of the day. And it was a three drivers from the police. One is going in front of the travel, one is right in the centre, one in the back, just in case anybody broke down. And as soon as the discipline for crossroads came in handy then, the first one, as soon as you come to a crossroads, because there wasn't many crossroads with lights then, there's very few. We should stop the crossroads and make sure that traffic was held up then, the whole convoy got through. And then when you got the whole convoy through, we stopped there until the last one, the first convoy had a blue flag and the last one had a red flag. And once the red flag, where the jeep had passed, he used to follow that, and the one from the centre, he used to move up to the front of it, and then one from the back, he moved to the centre, and he used to get all the way down. And if one broke down, well, he went on there to the first one, told him, and the convoy stopped the nearest place they could get to the quarter.
How far apart would the vehicles be travelling?
Well, I think it was a set standard of them days was about 20 or 30 feet between each truck. So you could get a good look at even when you're going on the way, what was happening on the bed of the road. But it was all well organised. We had no trouble getting down, except for a couple of breakdowns, which one trouble broke down, had to leave it because it was so big of a deal. We had to leave it and leave the driver and his helper and contact with somebody nearby. And they had to try to save him. He had to go back for him later. But he came back later along with his patent. But the troops had already. Five regiment police, or six regiment police, that had motorbikes, they went down with the troops by train, so they could take over down in Payton before we went down.
So you were with the transport, and the troops went, as you say, by train.
Yeah.
Where were you billeted in that area?
In Payton itself. We had, I think we just had a small battalion in the outskirts of Torquay. But Payton itself, when we first went, we had the guard room up outside of Payton, a big hill, I forget the name of it. I showed away that thing with it. I only knew it was a big pub called Smoky Joe's, but there was a farmhouse next to it, and that was the prison for the prisoners, because there was prisoners went down with the troops, with the police. And we were told from each show that it was up in the farm. The farmhouse, the farmers on it were at this off house and done it out spread it and done it as a prisoner, you know, like for the prisoners. And then we only had three at the time, so and it was nothing serious, so we didn't do it too bad.
And these farmhouses would be requisitioned, families sent off, were they?
Well, quite a few things requisitioned. We had schools. We had a holder camp, the Hayden holder camp, up the same road as we went for the prisoners station. We had a holder camp, we had schools, and we had other little bit of sort of other place. We stretched out, as I would say, from one end of Payton to the other, and I said to the near side of Torquay.
That must have made it difficult to supervise the battalion when they were being scattered.
That's where the motorbikes came in handy for the motorbike police. We should go right around and check different times, go around different, checking on different companies if there's any trouble or whatnot. But any prisoner was to bring in, for any trouble, was to bring in to HQ. It was just on the outside of the table.
Was this a large country house, your typical HQ?
Big country house it was, yes. Actually, I think it had been a hotel one time as well, but it was large, very, very large.
How were you received in the area?
Very, very well, as a matter of fact, I was surprised. I mean, I'm not Lawson, but over-tarrassing being taken by everyone, wasn't it? Of course, it didn't cause much trouble, most of the civilians, you see. Man, a great number of travellers, and we're told before we went to these places, while in Leicester, all the companies had Leicester, they're going to a new town, you've got to behave and this, that, and that. And they sort of went through them, and I thought, well, if we behave, I think most of us, if we behave, the local people will take them, you see. So that was the point. No, the local people was very, very good. I mean, we were only there one night, and we went into a public house, and they said, we're all friends before, after I've been in half an hour. We didn't have to pay for half the time, we didn't pay for any drinks. But before we left, we were invited out for supper and different things. And, you know, they've just taken it as granted that we've been here for all the time. Yeah. They were very, very good. And inside the town, I mean, when we went over the motorbike and the cycles, we found that there was very little trouble. I mean, and then again, we had a big band. We arranged to play a bit for the civilians at the local hood dance hall. You know, that with the PRI, it's to get all these little things forward. And then we used to play with them and play with different units in the area. Brixham, that was the Canadians, and Totnes was another battalion of different people, because they were different places, they played different nights for the same. So everything sort of fit. And with all our dance in the town itself, you should get all the soldiers in there, because quite a lot of the civilians used to get in as well, you see, make it a good one. So they didn't have any trouble at all. When it was a dance time, we should have always told policemen to dance as well, you know, to make sure they're not there. You know?
And you were back to training, were you, and exercises?
Oh, yes. Started the skis again. Well, you had been there about a fortnight. I had a great big scheme with the Canadians, you know. And it was a real live scheme, what I call a live scheme. Most of it's partly live ammunition used for a start, to get them used to different things. And went off well, no accidents or anything. A bit rough stuff from the Canadians, you know, they were tending really to really hard, you know. There was a bus school that's over together. I can't recall that there was much heard of by a battalion at all there.
Were the manoeuvres that you were having, were they based on fire and movement, or?
Well, the biggest scheme was based on Princetown, that's where the prisoners, Dartmoor Prison, Dartmoor, and the Dartmoor itself. And it was a real hazard, I must admit. It was what I call a grade one scheme, because it was in country where you had to be a real soldier, and I know all of us living as a soldier, because you were on your own for over a week, and you only had food brought out to you by cooks and whatnot. You didn't have the only army rations to take with you in your back of your pack, but you actually got a hot meal every day brought to you from the main headquarters, you see. So it was what I call a real scheme. That was a scheme of the Canadians and other units. It was a real tester for them. Actually, we thought that the battalion thought we were going to go abroad from there, because everything seemed to be engaged in the real warfare, you know.
And you said you used the real ammunition was used. Were you working with artillery and tanks?
Yes, the Canadians were the tank regiment, and they were the full tanks on that, and they also had a battalion of regiment as well, you know, with the tanks. But the whole issue was on every mobile thing you would think of for invasions or things you could say, you know.
Was the Air Force involved?
Yes, well, they were flying and dropping dummy bombs and whatnot. Yeah.
What was the role of a regimental policeman in a battle situation? Because this would be a battle situation.
Well, it's just the same as busy at queue, we'd call over to go different places to guide troops here and there in case anything went wrong. We had to be there for if anything went wrong, any company was in trouble, we should be there to go and see what the trouble was, that's what they say. We weren't called for anything, you know, we were trying. Some of the police that had the motorbikes went with different companies of policemen to make sure that everything was on smoothly, you know, any trouble. Which is reported by wireless system, which is supposed to stay out there, you see.
What trouble might that be?
Maybe injuries or anything And that trouble, as trouble is concerned, you know, I never heard it. I don't think I could get any trouble. It was meant to be army training case, you know.
Were you taught as regimental police the old battlefield police role, where you were behind the units with the idea that if any of them broke,
yes.
you were there to either take them or chase them back? Were you taught that?
Yes, and we still had to leave one back, a couple back, at Payton for the ones that were back there to make sure that when you had two prisoners in, they had to be looked after. Because sometimes if it was prisoners in for just some trivial, when the scheme came on, they were let out and sent back to their companies. Is it just, if there were two prisoners that they had more than 14 days, they were let back. So that's only about one motorbike and then just back at the camp.
But you were told, were you, or were you not, that in a real battle situation, your role might be to, as I say, be behind the units, picking up stragglers or desertions or whatever. Yeah. Was that actually put to you?
Mm-hmm. I think that was about the biggest game I was ever on, and I can't remember any other schemes after that. There was a small one, you know, for cookies and whatnot, but not for the big battalions. It was just only duties of guards and different things. Putting guards on the coastline in case anything came up. Right then, that was all.
Again, beach defence work.
Defense.
And the scheme you mentioned and others would include night workers as well, presumably.
Oh, yes.
Did you become involved with the Home Guard?
We had occasionally we came and followed up. I've got to tell you a bit of the Home Guard in Fulton, but not at Payton. I think myself, the Home Guard had one or two of our sergeants and given them lectures when they were there. I think that's the only time with the Home Guard. So I think the relish our battalion sending a sergeant and an officer, they give them their first hand information, you know.
Where did you go to when you left Payton?
I went to Hornsey. Yeah, that's in the Yorkshire. Yeah, Hull. Yeah, Britain, actually.
What were you doing there?
Well, just the same as usual. I mean, actually, when we got there, they distributed to different places. Not farmhouses, but they had schools and different things, and big houses for the HQ and whatnot, just the centre there. And it was sort of just general duties all the way through. Because at that time, I forgot to tell you, when we were painting, they started taking a little bit of dribs and dabbles from the battalion for the Grove Road. And I think myself, going to Hornsey, that's what's going to happen, because I went to Hornsey for about 3 weeks when different people were leaving going to Grove, you see. So it was just sort of a holding battalion.
And it was the same process, except they moved you around quite a bit.
Yeah.
Were you with them right through the Hornsey time?
No, I went abroad from Hornsey. Actually, my time was very short at Hornsey. In February, I was getting a week's leave in the beginning of February.
This is
1942? 1942. And, no, I was going to get a week's leave in January. And in February, I had to pack in and go abroad. I'll take the road road, so I left Hornsey in February to go to, I forget where I went to, I know it was here from Liverpool and the Cape Town Castle.
Had this just come about, or had you been asking if you were going to go, if you were going abroad?
I sort of knew it was coming about, that they were going to pick the road, different things, you know.
Was this still regimental police at that time?
No, I get it in from then. When I moved from Payton, I went back there to instruct them to a company.
Which company were you with now?
I think it was D company. I wasn't quite sure. I wasn't quite sure what company it was. But anyway, as I say, I didn't have much chance to do anything there. By the time we got there, it was coffee, written away, and I had a week's leave, a 10 days leave, that was 10 days leave, and we're pretty sure that when we come back we'll be at the first next draft. And I think a week after I came back from holiday, I was on the draft for.
Were you excited at the prospect of going abroad?
I don't think I can ever remember one of the lads that went with me. Of course, I knew most of them. There was about, I think there were 20 or something. And I can't remember one of them mourning about going abroad. They all seemed to be, you know, rehab. What a couple was complaining because they didn't like to see. But we're told we might maybe 6 or 7 weeks on board a ship, so it came as a surprise to me as well.
Did you know which unit you were going to join at this point in time?
No, we didn't.
It was just a draft move.
It was a draft move. It went right over to out there the British Airways, you know, from different times, Air Force, the whole lot. And as I say, we were dispatched to Liverpool. We were on board a Cape Town Castle.
Were you still a corporal at this time?
Yes, I was. I was promoted on the ship. But there was a mixture of Britain board. Some more battalion, some more DLI coming out of the battalions. Some was from the 16th and 17th. But anyway, we got on this Cape Town Castle with all battalions, battalions of different units, including the RAF, and we sailed from Liverpool, as I say. I can't tell you the date, but we sailed from Liverpool. And,
was it part of a large convoy?
It was part of a very large convoy. I can remember when I sailed to Winchester Castle there. There's quite a few, but I think it was about 15 or 16 other vessels to convoy with us.
Must have been quite a sight for a young chap who'd never been very far.
It was amazing. I mean, I'll be honest with you, I'd never been abroad before then. Didn't have a chance, actually. But I'd never been abroad, and most of them was ill when they got there. They were nice to about the 2 or 3 days on board. Sometimes you got out the harbour, it was rough season, when I was one of them. But after a few days, some of us picked up. We were left alone in different places of the ship to look after after ourselves, because they knew that Pete was ill and they couldn't do anything about it. And after about 6 or 7, a week abroad, everybody was picked up and we started to get different deals, sort of drills for the ship itself, you know. And some of the different battalions was picked up, had the Navy on the Holland runs. They fell on my hand. Anything happened through the day, to give you lifeboat drill and to have the holiday drill to keep you in training, PT and different things like that. But halfway there before we got to Durban, well, actually we were six weeks on the ship, but four or three and a half weeks on the ship before we arrived at Durban.
Before we do that, can we look at the conditions on the ship itself that you were living in and feeding in and so forth?
I mean, it was haphazard at times, you know, until you got used to it. There was a lot of hammocks down in the hold.
You were down on a mess deck, were you?
On a mess deck, yeah, on a bottom deck. Hammocks, you know, and some people had the proper place to lay to sleep, like I know. But we had to get used to hammocks, that was all.
And how did you get used to hammocks? Did you manage all right?
Well, yes. The chaps that was on the ship itself used to have a show how we get in out of the hammock, so it was a bit difficult for us, but because you're full of self, you're in at the time, you're going to the toilet in the back of the hammock, you've got to get in your hammock, they sort of said.